MSAs, marketing service agreements, are they a good idea? Are they a bad idea? Tune in and we'll explore. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children 18 plus, you are tuned in to the Loan Officer Podcast with me, Dustin Owen, and my main man,
JC
John Coleman.
Yo, what's poppin'?
Boring ass episode today, John.
I know, thank God I hit the bowl before listening to this one.
If you are not a mortgage loan originator, if you do not run a mortgage company,
tune in.
Or if you're not a real estate agent or a real estate broker, okay, this episode might not be for you. Like, look, we have an entire catalog of episodes. Go check us out. Spotify, Apple, YouTube. Our YouTube channel is chock full of additional content, not just podcast episodes, but we have playlists galore. Go check us out. But yeah, if you're not in the real estate space, if you're not in the mortgage space, more than likely you're going to want to tune this one out.
Okay, so that means I get to tune out as well.
John, you tune out just about every episode.
I know, but I still like pick up most of what you're saying and can regurgitate it at like hotel lobby bars and stuff to surprisingly amounts of accuracy.
You do a really good job. Are you looking forward to Las Vegas?
I am. This is going to be probably my fifth or sixth time as an adult going to Vegas, so now I know how to like pace myself. I think I'm not going to start drinking until I actually land.
Well, and you're pushing the big 4-0, so maybe that's going to slow you down a little bit.
I know. I told you, I made the switch. Do you know what the switch is?
No, I do not know what the
Michelob
switch is.
Michelob Ultra.
No. What happened to the Heineken?
I had to put down the Heineken, the craft beers. It just got too heavy. Get too fucking bloated.
Okay, so it was a health decision.
Yeah, it's not like, nothing happened. It was just like, I feel too bloated and I don't like the way it makes me feel. So yeah, now I'm drinking Michelob Ultras, playing basketball like the commercial says.
Wow. Well, we are T-minus 3 weeks before Mastermind Summit.
I know.
Yes. Y'all, there are still tickets available. Mm-hmm. Go to mastermindsummit.com. Check out this lineup. Or better yet, go to TLOP online.
Yeah.
And scroll down on the main page. You'll see where we're going to be next. Like, for example, you and I are going to, before we go to Las Vegas, we're going to Cedar Rapids, Iowa.
Shutting down the state.
Cedar Rapids, Iowa. Shout out to ArchMI and all the rest of the sponsors. Yeah. We already have 72 RSVPs. I didn't know Iowa had 72 people.
It does.
Well, maybe there's Iowa plus Nebraska plus Illinois are all going to send delegates to this event that you and I are going to be hosting. But yeah, the sponsors, ArchMI. Arch was able to get 5 other co-sponsors. So shout out to them. So yeah, if you're on TLOP online and you want to figure out Mastermind Summit because you want to go drink Mick Ultras with JC, then you know that information's on there. There's even a discount code, so use it. And if you're in or around,
that's hard to say,
Iowa, mm-hmm, yes, come. We're just going to be a 4-hour, half-day LO sales event with JC and D.O. Yeah,
with D.O. Thanks. D.O. and JC in the corner somewhere, not...
Perfect. Featuring JC. Yeah, thanks to ArchMI. All of that is on the website. And today's episode is actually brought to us by another event.
Okay.
Yeah, but this event already passed.
Shout out, let me guess, MBAG?
MBAG, Mortgage Bankers Association of Georgia, Rick, and that entire crew.
I heard you had a
good time. I had a phenomenal time. I woke up yesterday morning at 5 a.m. I was on the road by 5:30. I drove my happy ass to Jacksonville, Florida from Orlando. And checked into the hotel, One Ocean. It's a pretty swanky resort right there on the beach. And that's where the event was being held. For some reason, the Mortgage Bankers of Georgia love to come down to Florida and stay on the beach for their annual conference.
Beaches are better.
Yeah. Do you know they call Jacksonville the first coast?
Why is that?
I'm assuming because it's the first major Florida city that you come to when you're traveling south on 95.
Are the beaches nice though?
They're not nicer. Like the nicer beaches in Florida, in my opinion.
No, don't. Paso Grill, West Coast, Tampa.
Well, that's yours. And that, I would agree with you.
Destin?
Destin's pretty. Siesta Key is pretty. Even when you start getting West Palm Beach all the way down to Miami Beach.
Yeah, but where's your?
Those are it. Like, those are mine. I wouldn't say the first coast. That the whole Jacks Beach, Atlantic
crusty
Beach area is like the, it's still the beach.
It's crusty.
Look, if you're living in Iowa or Nebraska, that's a beach. It looks like, and that's swamp, better than the beach you have there.
It looks like swamp water.
All right. So anyhow, we were there. I was there. I got to speak.
Okay.
Right. So I did a whole entire presentation on what it means to be a next gen lender. I'm doing something similar, a little bit more impactful in Vegas, because that one's going to be more geared specifically towards loan originators and mortgage brokers. This one was more towards like the leaders in the mortgage industry. But then I was able to go hang out with, shout out to Tom Reber. Tom's a huge TLOPer. He's a big name in the mortgage industry. Been around for 30 years. He's like the man in Jacksonville, Florida. Mm. But Tom invited me and several others who were in town for this event to this distillery called Jack Son Tucky.
Jack Son Tucky.
They've won awards, gold medals, double gold medals. Got to do a whiskey bourbon tasting. Mm-hmm. Actually bought a bottle. I'm contemplating, do I give that bottle to Rob Farragher or do I keep that bottle for myself?
And you buy two and drink one.
But the event was phenomenal. Shout out to Melissa Syke with MMI. Shout out to Carol Burke with MMI. Like, these are some of the people that I got to see and hang out with. Connected with some originators I haven't met before. Sure. It was a great event. It was a phenomenal event. And somehow I was going to tie it into what we were talking about, and I can't remember. So
that usually happens when you go on your tirade. You're so thankful.
Today's episode.
There we go.
That was it. Today's episode was an originator came up to me right after I spoke, and I was like, oh, cool. He's going to talk about being a next-gen LO. No, he had questions regarding an MSA. He had questions regarding a market service agreement and wanted my input on it.
Uh-huh.
And you know what he did? I don't know if he knew he was doing this, but he did this.
Right.
What happens when you ask me questions like that when I geek out? What do you call it?
He wound you up.
He wound me up.
He was probably looking for a three-word answer, and you gave him 300,000.
Have you ever known me to be able to, like,
real talk, people ask, like, John, how do you do it? But like, yo, I'll just straight up walk out the room while he's talking. He'll continue to talk, and, like, he'll continue to talk, and he won't stop, and then you'll come back in the room, and he'll pick up right where he left off.
So I am cognizant of it, and my feelings do get hurt. Like, at first, I get mad at myself. Right. And then I'm like, damn, I was that bad that they just.
But you keep going like the Energizer Bunny. And it's like you like a toy that just runs up against the wall and just keeps going. Yes. Like, yeah, it's fine. Look, though.
We all have our flaws. We all have our faults, I guess. Fine.
No, it's opportunities for growth. That's what I call it.
Yes. I have many opportunities for growth. Yeah. My managing partner over at the mortgage company, David Holbrook, and my wife. I feel like both of them were put on this earth to just correct me and tell me everything that I'm not doing.
We should play a game like that, and I'm gonna be like, who said this, your managing partner or your wife, and just see which one you get wrong.
Oh my goodness, my therapist would have a field day with that.
That's a good game.
Yes.
Guess who said this line. All right.
All right, so marketing service agreements, for those that don't know, what are they, right? We're getting that. What are marketing service agreements? Okay. It is essentially a way for a lender to partner with a real estate brokerage, not an independent realtor. It tends to be the brokerage. Mm-hmm. And they're going to pay money every single month in order to have their name, their likeness, and their brand represented. Okay. It is, in a way, legal pay for play. And I'm not saying that because I'm a compliance person, and I promise you the compliance people who tune in are just going to hate the fact that I said that. Mm-hmm. Dude, I'm just a loan originator guy, a loan dude, a mortgage dude. That's my perception. Mm-hmm. Okay, it is not that, because we cannot do pay for play. RESPA Section 8 says emphatically that is illegal. Lender and realtor could both be punitively penalized for doing anything that resembles pay for play. It's a way for me as a lender to partner with a real estate brokerage and pay them a fee for me to market myself, my company, my brand, and my products to their agents and to their buyers. That means I have to have my marketing collateral readily available to their listings, to their open houses. I need to have access to their team meetings. I need to have my brochures displayed in their lobby. I need to have information available during their meetings. Like, it's a true marketing, maybe even signage, either on the outside of the building or the inside of the building. Like, it's truly a way for me to come in and say, hey, look, you have a lot of home buyers who come in here to buy homes. You have a lot of realtors who are representing those home buyers. I would love to be able to market my services and my brand and my likeness openly. And we come up with a dollar amount. Okay, that's what it is. Mm-hmm. So that's what a marketing service agreement is. Now, throughout the past 15 years, it's been very highly contested, debated. How risky is it? Because the CFPB wants to shut down anything that resembles pay for play. Mm-hmm. Right? That whole quid pro quo, it's a no-no. That is what RESPA Section 8 is all about. So there's been times throughout the past 15 years, and I know this because I helped run a mortgage company for my day job. Yeah, by the way, podcasting, not quite yet the day job.
Still a hobby.
And even the MLO coaching community that you and I launched with Mark and Nikki and our faculty last year, that is still very much a company and an organization in its infancy.
Yes.
By the way, we are taking on new members. So if you're looking for coaching and training, go to TLOP Online. I promise you, dollar for dollar and bang for buck, there's nothing better.
Yep.
Okay. So helping run a mortgage company, I've known this. We've been in more MSAs. We've been out of MSAs. The industry's been, hell yeah, let's rock out. Oh my gosh, I'm scared the CFPB is going to come at me with like a sword and chop my head off for doing them. But first we have to start with, well, what are they? And I just explained that's what they are. Why would a lender or why would a real estate brokerage want to partake?
Because then if I'm an MSA and I'm in agreement, they're going to feed me all their leads.
Possibly. That's why a lender would possibly want to do it. Yeah. Why would a real estate agency or a real estate broker want to do it?
Because I know this lender can get my loans closed on time and they have great customer service.
I mean, that could be like answer 1B.
Yeah, well, I don't know 1A then.
Come on, John.
I don't.
What drives people?
Money.
Money. Yeah, for that real estate brokerage, they're looking at ways to capitalize on the fact that they have the end user calling them first. They have the buyer, the borrower, that person who needs a home loan, that person who needs a home inspector, that person who needs to close a transaction with a title company or a closing attorney, that person who needs homeowners insurance. So when you're a real estate brokerage, I don't fault the broker owners for thinking this way. They're like, look, we do what we do to get the end user to come to us first. If they're going to come to us first, I might as well open up a mortgage company. I might as well open up a title company. I might as well open up an insurance agency. I might as well own a home inspector company and let them all be run independently. But if I'm the broker owner, I want to have ownership interest in that. But not everyone is big enough or wants to take on that the headache or put the investment forward to open up those secondary businesses that support home ownership in America. So what they would want is, oh, let's do a marketing agreement.
Gotcha.
Yeah, I'll open up access to my clients and to my sales team so you can market to them for a fee. That's what it really is. So I don't fault the brokerage for wanting to do it, but they want money. Yes, they want to make sure they choose a company whose culture and standards are akin to what they expect. But at the end of the day, it's money.
Give me that money.
They want the money.
Right.
So that's why a real estate brokerage would want it. They want the money. Why would a mortgage company want it? Yeah, they want the exposure. They want the opportunity. So the person who asked me this question was like, hey, what are your thoughts on it? So this is where I'm going to ask y'all, don't kill the messenger, because I'm one person who represents an industry, but I'm not the only voice and I'm not the only person who works in this industry, but I'm going to share with you my experiences over the past 2 decades. My experiences are this. Most real estate agents are independent contractors or 1099. Just because a mortgage company is paying the owner broker of that real estate brokerage, it doesn't mean that the agents are going to want to hop on board. So if I'm a lender, I have to understand that. That just because I'm paying money to the owner of the real estate brokerage does not mean that his or her agents, who are 1099 independent contractors, are going to give a hill of beans, because how much of that money is going to them? Now, if I'm setting up an MSA, I'm talking to that broker owner and I'm saying, hey, by the way, do your agents know what value I bring as the lender? And more importantly, do they understand that the money I'm paying is helping you do X for them and whatever X is? Because if I'm going to enter into an MSA, I'm going to need to have the buy-in of the agents who are independent contractors. And a lot of times where MSAs fail, where they don't work out, it's because literally the agents don't respect their broker owner. And they just basically tell the lender, hey, look, I don't care how many times you show up. I don't care how many times you speak. I don't care how many times you give me marketing collateral for my open houses. I'm not going to refer you. You don't benefit me one bit. I already have my relationships. And by the way, the only person who's getting money off of this is the broker owner. I get none of that.
But please continue to bring your donuts every third Thursday.
Correct. Please continue to bring your donuts every third Thursday. And oh, by the way, do you have money for a holiday party?
Yes,
right?
Thank you. You're invited.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Make sure that check clears before you show up to the holiday party. So like that's where it's like a conundrum. Like there's a way for this to work and there's a way that it doesn't work. So my advice to this gentleman at the MBAG event, that's what we were talking about earlier, being up the Mortgage Bankers Association, is here's what I found. This is a lender. So realtors, like this is the truth. This is how one person thinks. I look at a marketing service agreement two different ways. I'm either going to be strategically stealth and aggressive on an offensive way where I'm going to build the relationship, make the money. I'm going to go in, crush it, bring tons of value, show up, be involved, immerse myself into the culture. And about 3 years later, I'm going to look to exit it. Because what I've learned over time is that when I go into an MSA, most times, I'm going to build the relationships that I built, and I'm not going to be able to build any more. At which point, I have to make the financial decision. If I exit out of the relationship, how many of these real estate agents continue to refer me because I've built a personal bond with them? They trust my team. They trust the work I do. And regardless if I'm the in-house lender or not, would they still refer me? And I make a business decision. Sometimes the business decision is, this is amazing. This works. I'm not rocking the boat. I love the volume I get. I love the revenue I generate. And I'm fine with the expense. But other times, and where I have found success, is you could be a little bit more aggressive, stealth mode. You go in, you build all the relationships you can, and whatever you can't build, you can't build. And 3 years, 4 years later, you look to back out, right? Because I made the relationships. Those people are going to work with me regardless if I'm paying their broker, owner, or not. Mm-hmm. That's one way to do it. The other way is what I call the protection, right? This is you building a fence around something that's already yours because you built the relationships the old school way. They trust you. You do a great job. You bring value. You're already being invited to some of their after work events because they see you as one of them. Mm-hmm. But if you don't pony up some cash, start investing in the brokerage through a marketing service agreement, someone else may come in. Well, I may very well look at that relationship and say, you know what? I could definitely spend some money. I can have my marketing collateral be officially represented. I could officially be in partnership with my signage and placement on the website. And that's worth a few grand to me because I'm really wanting to protect what I've built. Right. And that's another way that I've seen MSAs work. But what all people need to understand when it comes to MSAs, and again, this is the world according to Dustin. This is my experiences. And my experiences with MSAs go back to 2005. So we're going on 20 years.
Holy shit.
I was a rookie loan originator working inside of an MSA. Shout out to everyone over at Remax Town and Country in Winter Springs, Florida. Okay. That was me. I was that guy. And I know the ins and the outs based on personal experiences. And then obviously managing branches and helping run divisions. We've had experiences with MSAs, the good, the bad, and the ugly. So what I can tell anyone who's willing to listen, it's a business decision. First and foremost, you have to have a third party vet the agreement and they will apply a value. That's how you stay out of the CFPB's crosshairs. The second thing I've learned you have to do is you have to do a monthly and a quarterly audit where you sit down with that broker owner and you can defend that the money you are spending actually delivered on the marketing exposure that you had had already audited and vetted and was agreed upon. Like, you have to make sure you're getting what you said you were going to get. Wow. I can't say, hey, here's $5,000 for X, Y, and Z, and X, Y, and Z don't get delivered. And we're like, who cares? As long as you send me leads, who cares? No, that's quid pro quo. That is pay for play. You can't do that. So things you do have to do is you have to do the audits and fill out the checklist and document that you're actually getting what you're paying for. But when I'm entering into it, real estate agents and brokerages and the lenders who are participating, both parties have to agree on this. This is the numbers. This is the math. This is the business side that nobody ever wants to talk about. First and foremost, 20% of the home buyers do not use a lender. So when I'm looking at entering into a partnership with a real estate brokerage, the first thing I have to do is say, well, 20% of your home buyers won't use me because they're paying cash. I'm a lender. I only get paid to do loans. I don't get paid when someone does a cash transaction, but realtors do. Then I have to look at this. A certain percentage of your buyers are already going to come with their bank, their credit union, or the person who did their loan last time. That just puts me at a competitive disadvantage. Like, the only way I'm going to win this is by throwing spaghetti against the wall to see what sticks, or by basically doing the loan for free. Well, if I start doing loans for free because I'm dropping my interest rate and reducing my fees, what's the purpose of being in business if you're not making money? Like, we all need to make money. We have bills to pay and families to provide for. So the people who aren't paying cash, right, there's a percentage of them. So let's say we started with 100 home buyers. Well, 20 of them are gone. 20 of them are paying cash. That leaves me 80.
Yep.
And by the way, it's probably closer to 25 right now. Like, 1 in 4 people are paying cash for the home trade.
Shit, where'd that money at?
Right? Get me some
God
of that.
Dang.
Get me some of that. So let's just be nice and say there's 80. But of those 80, there's going to be easily a third who already come with their lender.
Not using you, bro.
Yeah. So, okay. So all of a sudden I have 48 transactions that I can chase. Of those 48 transactions, they still are going to compare me to other lenders. So I have to compete for them. And of those 48 transactions, I get paid on loan amount, not on purchase price. Think about that. I'm a lender. I get paid on loan amount, not purchase price. Well, realtors get paid on purchase price. You buy a home for 400 grand, they're going to make their commission on 400 grand. You buy a home for 400 grand, but you put $100,000 down and you're only borrowing 300, I get paid on 300.
Mm.
So like, there's a certain just numerical business conversation that has to be had regarding what is the total possible opportunity when it comes to units and volume. And then how much do I think I'm going to gross revenue off that units and volume? And is that going to be incremental? Because I, as a lender, I'm just running an ROI, right? Because I have X amount of marketing dollars to spend. I can spend them on paying higher commissions to my sales teams to incentivize them to go out and lead generate greater. I could call Mike McAllister over at Empower LO, right? Or Luke over at Loans on Demand, right? Or the guys and girls over at Evocalize. And I can figure out ways that I can start lead generating on my own and just spending money. Or I could call Zillow and lead generate on my own and just spend money. Those are things that I could do with my marketing dollars. I could put them towards lunch and learns and happy hours and realtor events. Like, there's only so many dollars. I'm running an ROI. And every lender who's looking at doing an MSA should also be looking at just the ROI side of things. And then you have to look at capture rate. I have learned that a 20% capture rate is huge. So if there's 48 buyers who aren't paying cash, then I should look at that and say, cool, I should probably get about 9 to 10 of them.
The hell?
Yeah, so 9 to 10. So I have to figure out what is 9 to 10 loans worth to me. And that's, by the way, that's a good relationship. That's a good partnership between the broker owner and the mortgage company, with support from the 1099, 100% commissioned agents that work for that brokerage. 20% capture rate. If you're getting 30%, you're effing crushing it. Right? You're crushing it. So I run my numbers off of 20% capture rate. That's after I take out 20% of the people who are going to pay cash. I'm not worried about the loans that I lose because they shot me and went with their best friend's cousin's uncle because he saved them an eighth in rate. Not worried about anything to do with loan size, although I know what my average loan size is. So that factors into, if I do 9 to 10 transactions, it's 9 to 10 transactions, not at an average sales price of 400, but an average loan amount of 330.
Mm-hmm.
And then I figure out what's my gross revenue on that based on my product mix. And after I pay my LOs, like, those decisions go into it. So if you're ever going to enter into an MSA, you have to run the math. There's a business side of things. There's an ROI that you have to factor. When you're factoring the ROI, my rules of thumb: remove cash buyers. That's important. And focus on your loan amount times the transaction, not sales price. Loan amount times the number of transactions. And I think a good capture rate is 20%. If you're capturing 20% of the available financed buyers, you're doing good. 30% means you're crushing it. From there, you should be able to figure out what's that dollar amount you're willing to invest. And then finally, does that dollar amount match what the real estate broker owner is looking to? And is there enough value? Because you still have to get it third party validated. Is there enough value? Let's say the number was $5,000. I ran my math based on the buyer transactions. I removed the cash. I then look at a 20% capture rate times my average loan size times my average gross revenue generated per loan. And I come up with a dollar figure. And let's say that dollar figure, John, is $5,000.
Mm-hmm.
I then have to figure out, can they provide me enough marketing exposure that a third party company would validate or value that agreement at $5,000? If the answer is yes, then I move forward. Now I have to still build the relationships. I still need to bring value. I still have to not drop the ball. And then my goal would be, can I grow it? Can the brokerage grow? If the brokerage goes from 48 buy-side transactions a year, whatever it is, a month, up to 60 or 70 or 100, then obviously 20% of 100 is better than 20% of 48, you know? And that's where you could really have a relationship like this be beneficial for both, right? And then if that's the case, does my marketing exposure increase? And then could I increase what I'm spending? Like, I'm not for MSAs and I'm not anti-MSAs. the purpose of today's topic, and we haven't done one like this in years, if at all, was, look, I was inspired by a conversation I had at MBAG, and like, this is a way for lenders to lead generate, to bring value to the real estate community, and it's a legal way to do it. If you're going to enter it, you should know how and why, and I'm going to give you my two cents. That's what most of this has been. One last thing, and I'll maybe shut up and maybe you have some questions for me. Who knows? I would tell loan officers this. If your company is hiring you to work out of an MSA, or if your company is offering you to be the lender in an MSA, more than likely you're not going to make your full comp as if you were to go out and generate your own lead.
Right.
There's a certain part of this is what we call an in-house lead. This is a legit legal in-house lead. I built this relationship. Let's say I'm the company owner of XYZ Mortgage Company, and I built this relationship with XYZ Real Estate Brokerage, and my branch or my company is paying $5,000 a month, MSA marketing agreement. We're checking all the boxes. We're doing our audits. We're on the up and up. If I hire you to work for me as an originator, I'm probably, let's say, going to pay you 100 basis points, just to use round numbers, y'all, to do loans where you self-generate your own leads, but I'll pay you 75 if it comes from this marketing agreement, because this marketing agreement is something that I'm paying for. Mm-hmm. Therefore, the commission is a little bit less, mm-hmm. but it's also assumed that this marketing agreement gives you a leg up because you have access, you have exposure, and because we're really hitting those home buyers and those real estate agents hard with our marketing message and with our value proposition. And then bonus to all of this is understanding, and this was the advice I gave to this gentleman yesterday, understanding that a lot of the realtors who work for this brokerage don't give two shits about you.
I ain't using you.
Yeah, just like, look, I got my people. I've been doing this for 30 years. I've used Laura for 30 of those 30 years. Mm-hmm. And when Laura's not available, right, I have Sam.
And if Sam's not available?
I'll call you. No, that's where I'd step in. And right. That was my point to this guy. I go, look, you're going to go into this relationship and there's 100 agents that work out of this brokerage, of which 60 of them should be out of real estate. Like, they should look, they're part-time. Yeah. They're not serious. They don't get after it. They don't treat their business like a business. It's a side hustle, whatever the case may be. That leaves you 40. Of those 40, you're probably going to have 6 or 7 that you're their dude. Like, you're their dude.
Gotcha.
But you know what? Don't get upset that you don't have the other 33. Dude, meet with those other 33 and keep it real. This is advice from someone who has had success within MSAs. Keep it real. Be like, look, I understand that you have Laura and Sam, and those are your two go-to, and I appreciate that. I'm not looking to break that up, John. I'm not. But I love your office. I love partnering with your agents. I love what you all stand for, and I love the relationship I have with your broker owner. And I'm sure you do, too. That's why you work here. Like, do you know, in order for this to really be successful, right? Because I'm here trying to earn your business. I'm here trying to bring value. I'm marketing. We got the exposure. Man, just throw me a bone. Mm. Just throw me a bone. Give me an opportunity. I'm not saying take stuff away from Laura. Don't take some stuff away from Sam. I'm just saying, hey, look, once a year, if you and I partner on one transaction once a year, do you know that I would exceed my sales goals?
Can I count on you?
Can I? There you go. Can I count on you for just one?
Yeah.
Like, you'd be amazed. And that's sometimes the power of an MSA, is you're protecting the relationship that you have with those 6 or 7, and you're there to pick up all the one-offs. Because the minute you back out of that MSA, and the reason why I would back out of an MSA is because I wasn't getting the one-offs. Because I'm confident that of those 6 or 7 ride or die, 5 or 6 are going to stay with me, even when I'm not paying the money to be a part of the marketing agreement. But what I'm going to lose out on is all those one-offs. So if you're a real estate broker, those one-offs is the reason why the partnership works. Mm-hmm. Like, long-term, that's what's going to keep me coming back. It's going to keep me engaged in the agreement. So if I'm a loan officer, I'm not trying to jam a square peg through a round hole. I'm not going to convince someone to do something they don't otherwise want to do. But I 100% can be like, yo, you're a team player, right? Like, for this to work, at a minimum, just throw me a bone once a year. Now, look, I want to earn your business. I want to be Sam. I want to be Laura in this, mm-hmm. but I'm not gonna break that up until Laura retires, until Sam moves out of production. So in the interim, that's what I asked for. And you'd be amazed the minute you start doing that and you keep it real and you become not threatening. Then people are like, oh, okay, cool. Yeah, yeah. Right? They'll throw you that bone while you continue to service the broker. Because that broker needs you. And when you're the MSA, they want you training the new agents. They want you helping you getting those new agents off the ground. Right? Because that's where you're a true partner. It's not just in the marketing dollars and the marketing collateral. It's like actually sales training with their newer agents, helping an agent who maybe sells 6 homes a year sell 10. Like that, those are ways that you can bring value. You'll continue to support those, again, 5 or 6 ride or die agents that love you. You love them. You all work together consistently. And then you're there just trying to get a little bit of love from the other 33 agents that kind of wish you weren't there. You don't do them any good. But the fact that you're a nice dude or a nice chick, you show up, you try hard, right? You're professional. You're not too aggressive, but you're willing to speak truthfully. I bet you can get some one-offs. And those one-offs are the difference of, did I capture 20% or did I not? Did I capture 30% or was I at 20%? It's a matter of getting in the one-offs.
Well said, Dustin.
Yeah, so those are MSAs. That's like the world according to me, Dustin yeah. Owen, as it pertains to marketing service agreements. That's what we mean when we say MSA. I'm not here to support MSAs. I'm not here to bash MSAs. I'm not the CFPB, so I'm not going to speak to RESPA Section 8. I'm not Mitch Keiter. I'm not like one of the thought leader attorneys in the industry, which Mitch is. Shout out to Mitch. I'm not any of that. I'm a loan dude. I'm a mortgage dude. But I'm speaking on behalf of loan originators, branch managers, area managers, CEOs of or owners of mortgage companies, as well as the clients they serve, which is real estate brokerages and realtors. Hopefully those people who tuned in, you learned a thing or two, or more importantly, I made you say, I made you think, I made you take down a note, and then it's that one thought that you can build upon to help you determine whether or not this would be a strategy you ever would want to deploy. And if you do deploy it, then I've helped point you in the right direction of where to take those thoughts, how to make it successful, how to determine whether or not you want to continue doing it long-term. Is it a strategic offensive move or is it a strategic defensive move or maybe it's somewhere in the middle? That's for you all to decide.
Sounds like sugar daddies should have MSAs in place.
I don't know about sugar daddies or sugar mamas or sugar babies and
like
how that would apply. And no, John, we need to stay away from anything that's quid pro quo or pay for play. But it is a business opportunity that when done ethically, legally, right, legitimately, can benefit both real estate brokerage mm-hmm. as well as the lender. Because here's the deal. Real estate brokers may want to own their own mortgage company until they look into it.
Right.
The upfront cost, the net worth requirements, the number of transactions you actually need to make it worth your while. Like JV sounds sexy, joint venture that is, until most real estate brokers say, nah, not me. Mm-hmm. Okay, cool. Then an MSA may be the way to go. And loan officers may think, oh, this is awesome. I need to have an MSA, but it's not always awesome, mm-hmm. right? It's a double-edged sword. Something we didn't cover. The minute you start working in an MSA, those other realtors who don't work for that brokerage, they may look at you differently. That's like bonus time now we're on. What? I didn't even cover that. Like when I worked at RE/MAX Town and Country in Winter Springs, Florida, do you think the agents across town at Century 21 or the agents at Coldwell Banker were like, you know, cool opening up to me and working with me? Or did they look at me as someone who possibly worked for the enemy? I worked for the competition across town.
Yeah.
So that's a slippery slope. As an originator, I have to ask myself, how strong are my partnerships outside of this MSA? And if I go into this MSA, am I going to ostracize some of those people? Right? We didn't even get into that. Like that is truly bonus time now that we don't have time to discover or to dive into. But y'all need to think about that before you do this. And if you continue to have questions, you know what a great opportunity to have questions answered? When you're a part of the Tila Hub coaching community, John, mm-hmm. like literally, we coach 7 times a month live. I'm doing several of them. I have top producers throughout the country who coach. We come prepared with 3 or 5 topics. These are things that we do to have the success we do or things we did to build and grow our businesses. Mm-hmm. We're sharing them with all of our members. But then we open up every single call, 20 to 30 minutes of pure Q&A. If someone has a question regarding MSAs, that would be a fantastic time for us to discuss it. So if you're looking for that type of training, coaching, guidance, plus you want a whole library of training videos, yes, you need to look at joining the TLOP MLL coaching community. It is literally less than what you would spend on it, on what you would make on an entire commission check.
Yeah.
And then look, if you're not looking to spend money because you're too cheap or you just don't need coaching or training or you have all the answers or you're the most successful that you've ever wanted to be and you're not looking for betterment, cool.
Turn up for a check.
We got some free stuff for you. This podcast is free. Our YouTube channel, so go to TLOP, subscribe to YouTube. Make sure you're subscribed to our newsletter. Like, I write that shit every single week. We send it out every single Thursday. And then keep on checking the website to see where I'm going to be speaking at next, because that's a great way for you to get more of this type of content for free, such as what we're doing in Cedar Rapids, Iowa on the 29th of May.
Hell yeah.
On that note, he is John Coleman. I'm Dustin Owen. You have just tuned in to an episode of the Loan Officer Podcast. That's all the time we have for you today, but we do look forward to catching you on the next episode. Peace.